presents First Years, a podcast for all but geared toward adult first-time readers of Harry Potter, who need a space to enjoy each book and have adult conversations about it. My name is Sarah, and I'm honored that you've allowed me on this journey with you. Crack open a butterbeer, grab a seat, and let's discuss. Today, we're talking about abandonment. Welcome, everybody, to episode 46 of First Years. Today, we are going over chapters 2 and 3 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Some quick house points news. We have clear slates on all of the house points right now. Hufflepuff won our third house cup. And thank you, everyone, who showed up to House Cup Cocktails Night. It was so fun, and I had such a blast. So now that we have clean slates, the way that you can earn house points for this next house cup is through interacting with us on Instagram, answering our Mindful Magic Mondays, answering our trivia questions in our stories on Wednesdays. We're going to kick that back up again. And we have some really exciting Instagram content coming up for you guys. You can also leave us a review on iTunes, and if you leave your name in your Hogwarts house, I will award you house points, bonus points. You'll get a lot more when you write a review than just commenting on an Instagram post, and you'll also get a shout out on here as well. So it's anybody's game at the moment. Hufflepuff has a winning streak, so if you are either in Hufflepuff or if you're in a different house and you want a chance to win, get going on those house points opportunities. So today we're talking about Order of the Phoenix and chapters 2 and 3. And so the first chapter of this book left off with a pretty incredible cliffhanger. We find out that Mrs. Fig, their neighbor, knows about the Wizarding World and knows about Dementors. And we find out that she's actually not a witch, but she's a squib, which is just like what Mr. Filch is in Hogwarts. So she has magical lineage, but no magical power herself. And we find out that someone named Mundungus Fletcher has been following Harry. And he was the one who disapparated in front of Harry's house and made that loud noise. So Harry actually wasn't crazy. It was the sound of someone disapparating. And Mrs. Fig says that Mr. Tibbles came and warned me. So we know this woman has a lot of cats, and I'm pretty sure Mr. Tibbles is one of her cats. So are her cats, like, super smart like Crookshanks is? Or are they animaguses? Are they magical cats? What do you guys think? Because Crookshanks and Sirius had like that connection in book 3. So do you think these are qualities that all cats have? Or are these like special magical cats that she owns because she is a squib and she's been keeping an eye on Harry? And we started this book talking about how Harry is angry and isolated, that Hermione and Ron are together without Harry, and he's not getting any news about anything. So he's been pretty much abandoned, or at least he's felt like it. However, it seems that Mundungus Fletcher has been following him, and apparently Dumbledore knows about it, and so Harry wasn't really as abandoned as he thought he was. Or was he? Since Mundungus ended up abandoning him anyway, and the Dementors came, and Harry had to face them alone. And he really needed an adult wizard in this moment, because he ends up in this predicament because he does some serious underage magic because he's left to defend himself. And Mrs. Fig says that this was what Dumbledore was worried about. What do you think he was worried about exactly? Dementors? Or more generally, an attack on Harry? Because otherwise, why would he have someone following Harry? And why couldn't Harry have known about whatever it is? And when it comes to Dumbledore, apparently he told Mrs. Fig to stay quiet about her knowing about the magical world, because he didn't want Harry to know. And so she apologizes for making it a miserable time whenever he had to go over to her house, but, you know, that the Dursleys wouldn't have let him come over if they knew he was having a good time, which says a lot about the Dursleys. But my question is, couldn't Harry have just kept that a secret from the Dursleys? It's not like he would have wanted to tell them that he was having a good time. It could have been an opportunity for Harry to have one sliver of happiness while living with the Dursleys if Mrs. Fig's house was a safe space for him. What do you guys think? And I want to point out that in these chapters, the ministry becomes a much more sinister entity. There's an exchange between Harry and Mrs. Fig that goes, "Harry, you don't understand. Dumbledore will need to act as quickly as possible. The ministry have their own ways of detecting underage magic. They'll know already, you mark my words. But I was getting rid of Dementors, I had to use magic. They're going to be more worried what Dementors were doing floating around Wisteria Walk, surely. Oh my dear, I wish it were so, but I'm afraid." And then Mundungus shows back up and Mrs. Fig yells at him. Those lines say a lot about the ministry. We saw at the end of the last book that the minister, Fudge, didn't believe what Harry was saying about Voldemort being back. He was believing these stories that Rita Skeeter was putting out that Harry was crazy. And so he thought Dumbledore was a fool to believe Harry and completely tossed aside the idea that Voldemort would be back. And here, Mrs. Fig is pointing out that Dumbledore needs to act quickly and is implying that the ministry really won't be concerned about Dementors being out in a muggle neighborhood. And as she's walking Harry and Dudley home, she says that Dumbledore was trying to get people from having Harry use magic at all costs. Because Dumbledore seems to be cautious after what Harry went through, which totally makes sense to me, but I'm wondering whether he was worried about an attack on Harry from Voldemort or the ministry. Because we don't know who is behind this attack. But Voldemort obviously has motive to go after Harry, and Harry's using magic has consequences that are tied directly to the ministry. So it could go either way, since Dumbledore predicted at the end of the last book that the Dementors would join Voldemort. So this plan, whoever is behind it, is a pretty good one, to get Harry as defenseless as possible. Especially with how the ministry handles everything, as we see when Harry gets home. Harry gets a note from the ministry, when he gets home, that expels him from Hogwarts. And it says that the representatives will arrive to destroy his wand, and then he needs to go to a disciplinary hearing in August. Which seems backwards, doesn't it? You would think that the hearing would be first, and then they would decide what to do with Harry's wand. That would be the logical thing to do, so why doesn't the ministry do that? And Harry, when he first receives this letter, immediately feels the weight of this. He can't go back to the place he has called home since he was 11 anymore. And Harry is going to run for it, and he isn't going to give up his wand. And just as he's about to do so, he gets a letter from Mr. Weasley urging him not to leave the house and telling him not to surrender his wand. Dumbledore is at the ministry sorting things out. And can we just take a moment to recognize how much power Dumbledore has? Like, we've heard he's a powerful wizard, but the fact that he can head into the ministry and has enough authority to do whatever he's doing to sort this thing out on behalf of Harry means he has a lot of power and respect in the wizarding world. So Harry takes a seat and decides to stay, and we have a very interesting moment here. Harry is trying to explain what happened, and when Vernon asks about what Dementors are, Petunia is the one to answer that they guard the prison. And she says that, quote, I heard that awful boy telling her about them years ago, unquote. She won't even say her sister's name. And we don't know who this boy is, but our best guess is that it was probably James, right? What do you think? And she can't even say his name. And why do you think that out of all of the things that Petunia remembers about her sister, the Dementors are one of them? She's probably done her best to forget everything she knows about the wizarding world, and yet this stuck with her. Why? Then Harry gets a third letter, again from the Ministry, saying that he can keep his wand and that he isn't expelled yet. Everything will be determined as of the hearing on the 12th of August. He's just suspended for the time being. Which makes more sense if we think about it, right? This is probably how this should have gone all along, so what does it say about the Ministry that it took Dumbledore walking in and handling things for this to have happened? Why would they be allowed to expel people first and have hearings second? Or do we think that this is just because it's Harry? We spoke last episode about how angry Harry is, and understandably so. And we see it again at everyone in this chapter. Harry wants to be alone and is about to go upstairs, but Vernon wants him to explain what happened. And Harry does accidental magic again. Sparks come flying out of his wand. Then, when Sirius's letter comes, it's two lines long, and it says, quote, "Harry found this such an inadequate response to everything that had happened tonight that he turned the piece of parchment over, looking for the rest of the letter, but there was nothing there." And now his temper was rising again. Wasn't anybody going to say, well done for fighting off two Dementors single-handedly? Both Mr. Weasley and Sirius were acting as though he'd misbehaved, and they were saving their tellings off until they could ascertain how much damage had been done. Unquote. Do you agree with Harry here? I think I do, because if you think about it, no one even said, glad you're okay, Harry. That must have been really scary. Well done defending yourself. If you need to talk about it, I'm here. Which, wouldn't you expect adults in Harry's life, like Sirius and Arthur, to say something like that? Wouldn't that be the first thing you would write in a letter? So what do you think? And Harry isn't the only one this summer evening to get a letter. Petunia gets one too. Harry is explaining to them that Voldemort must have been behind the attack, and that he's back. And Vernon decides that Harry can't stay because he's too much of a liability and will put the rest of the family in danger. And a howler comes through the window for Petunia. And it says, "Remember my last, Petunia." When she gets this letter, everything changes. She says that Harry has to stay, and we have no idea who this letter is from or what it means, but it does mean that Harry can stay at the house. So Harry goes up to bed and writes a letter to Sirius, Ron, and Hermione, demanding information about what's going on and when he's getting out of here, and he orders Hedwig to make sure that he gets long replies out of all of them before returning. And then Harry spends 4 days in his room, feeling antsy and furious and depressed, all of that in a recurring cycle. He doesn't know what to do. He can't really do anything but wait for answers, like he's been doing all summer. But now it's even worse because he has a hearing hanging over his head. But then he's finally rescued. The moment we've all been waiting for. Mad-Eye Moody, the real one this time, Lupin, and more came to finally rescue Harry from the Dursleys' house. And Moody says something interesting, asking if it's really Harry, and it would suck if they brought back a Death Eater impersonating Harry, which, again, begs the question of who was behind the Dementor attack. since why would a Death Eater get a hold of Harry and impersonate him to be brought back to where they're going? But we also know that Moody has a reputation for being a little overly anxious about things, and he goes on to talk about people who have lost buttocks for storing their wands in their back pocket. So, what do you guys think on that? So, this whole group is here for Harry. They sent the Dursleys off to God knows where, thinking they won a lawn competition, and yet there was no warning that they would show up. No one even hinted to Harry that they would get him out of here. Harry was left with nothing for days. What do you think about that? Is that fair or not? Or does it not matter because they're here and they're getting him out and that's all that matters in the end? Harry tries to ask about Voldemort, but he's cut off. Moody says it's too risky to discuss anything there. And he also learns that they're going to be flying to wherever they're going. Since Harry is too young to apparate and they can't use the flu network or a port key, he says that, quote, they'll be watching the flu network, unquote. Why is it such a big deal that they're taking Harry away somewhere else? Is the ministry hoping he'll be confined to the Dursleys? Why would it matter if they knew that other people were taking him elsewhere? What do you guys think this will be about? The piece of paper Harry is given at the end of this chapter reads, "The headquarters of the Order of the Phoenix may be found at number 12, Grimmauld Place." Is that why everything needs to be kept a secret? Because they couldn't say it out loud to Harry. They gave him a piece of paper and told him to read it quickly and memorize it. The Order of the Phoenix is the title of this book. So it must play a huge part in what's going to happen here. What do we think it is? What do they use headquarters for? And why bring Harry here and not somewhere else? And they're traveling using signals and stuff. They aren't able to leave Harry's right away. They have to wait for a signal to fly out of there. So what do you guys think we should expect? When Harry goes up to pack, Tonks comes up to help him. And she seems pretty cool. She can change her appearance because she's a metamorph magus, which is someone that can change their appearance at will. And she says that they're rare and they're born, not made, which is different from animagi, which you can learn to become if you study hard enough. So what other types of wizards are there? What other maguses do you think there are that are either born or learned? I would love to be a metamorph magus. That would be really cool. I'd probably prefer it over being an animagus. And going along with that is the idea that some wizards are better at certain types of magic. Tonks talks about how she's not that great at household cleaning spells, that her mother is better at them than she is. And this makes sense. I mean, in the Muggle world, we all have our strengths and weaknesses, and it tracks that it would be the same with magic. You know, we've seen Neville not be good at potions and other subjects, but he seems to excel at herbology. Harry excels at defense against the dark arts since he can produce a Patronus charm and was able to throw off an unforgivable curse multiple times last year. But do you think this is genetic? Because magic itself seems to be. And I wonder if the type of magic you're good at is connected to what your parents are good at. Because again, in the Muggle world, your genetics can make you predisposed to be good at something, and our parents can influence our interests. But there are also things that you can just be good at if you study hard enough. So where do you think certain magic subjects fall into on this? Genetics? Or if you work hard, you can do well? Because if we look at Hermione, she's great at everything, and her parents are Muggles. But perhaps the magic has been hidden in recessive genes or something along the lines of that. And perhaps she's good at the same things that whatever magical ancestor she has was too. So they get Harry packed and they head downstairs. They're flying to Grimmauld Place. And again, Moody talks about what the plan is, should anybody get killed on their way there. Which even with Moody being who he is and paranoid about everything, seems like he's serious, especially since they have to wait for a signal to take off. What kind of danger do you think Harry is in? And from whom? But thankfully, they get into the air and to Grimold Place without a hitch. And I want to read you this passage from when Harry is in the air. It says, quote, "Every thought of the ministry hearing was swept from his mind as though the rush of air had blown it out of his head. He felt as though his heart was going to explode with pleasure. He was flying again, flying away from Privet Drive as he'd been fantasizing about all summer. He was going home. For a few glorious moments, all his problems seemed to recede into nothing, insignificant in the vast, starry sky." Unquote. And then it also says, quote, "He had not felt this alive in a month, or this happy." Unquote. Flying has always been a comfort to Harry. It was something that he picked up on immediately when he took the class at age 11. It's also what got him through the first task last year. And so now, I think getting Harry to his next destination by broomstick is really significant. So far in this book, we've seen how miserable Harry has been because he's felt so stuck, and now he is literally embodying freedom. Quite literally as close to the phrase "free as a bird" as he can get. It's also literally a breath of fresh air. He's outside. All of his worries have gone away. It's a great moment for him, and honestly, it's well deserved. Because he didn't deserve to stay at the Dursleys for another minute. And now he'll be surrounded by people he can talk to and who care about him. We arrive at Grimold Place, and we see something familiar from the very first chapter of this book series. The put-outer that Dumbledore used to take out the streetlights on Privet Drive. Moody has it, and he uses it for the same purpose, which is a really cool throwback. Then Moody gives Harry the paper that says that the headquarters of the Order of the Phoenix is at 12 Grimold Place, London. I've noticed with this chapter and the first chapter that it's almost like a cliffhanger. We get brand new information that's intriguing and makes us want to read more. We're already learning a lot in this book so far, and I really hope it continues. In the meantime, give me your best theories as to what the Order of the Phoenix is. Email me at firstyearspodcast@gmail.com or shoot me a DM or tag me on Instagram or Twitter at firstyearspod. For next time, you just have to read chapter 4, and I will see you then. First Years is a production of Matchbook. It's produced by Quinn Parker and myself, Sarah Jones-Dittmeyer. All sources can be found in our show notes or on our website at authorsarahjonesdittmeyer.info/firstyearspodcast. That's Sarah with an H, and Dittmeyer is spelled Dittmeier. Please remember that staying a Harry Potter fan is the biggest form of revolt that you can have, and we are committed to continuing to make this fandom and this community safe and welcoming to everybody.